You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Why, hello there, everyone. Today we're talking Christopher Lambert. We're talking Highlander. You got your swords, you got your fighting, Sean Connery. In a canon movie that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, you've got a lot of fun stuff going on. So look forward to that. What else we got? Plugging. So next month, if you're listening to this when this comes out, I will be performing with Cineprov at a live event, of course. And we'll be doing the Matt Salinger Captain America, the one where I guess his superpower is stealing cars. It's a disaster. It barely got an American release, and it's named Captain America. So watch that one with Candace and Larry and I. Also, if you can, please give me a review. I need the reviews. It'd be great to hear from all of you. So 5 stars on Stitcher or wherever you get us, and share us around because I want to grow. Yeah, let's grow. Let's see if we can get some myopia shows out there. Thanks. Oh, before I forget, Mike keeps asking me to plug it, so I'm going to keep plugging it. ESO Network has a Patreon, patreon.com/ESO Network, and, you know, donate a few shekels. We've got a myopia piece coming out soon, so thanks.
I've been alive for 4.5 centuries. I am immortal.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmo Show and the PCC Multiverse.
I see the potential for basically like another Netflix kind of paradigm shift where here comes this other major player. They have a ton of resources. Apple could change the way that entertainment is consumed.
They say it's the only time this year that you'll have stars from each brand battling each other. And we know it's not going to be the case, but they like to say that, and more power to them, I guess.
Well, it's a big first step, bringing all those superheroes together. There were definitely some parts of the movie that I really enjoyed. And then there were some parts that I thought just kind of fell short of expectation.
Part of it has to be something to do with how it's being promoted. And this is a thing where audiences do not agree with critics.
That's the Pop Culture Cosmo Show.
And the PCC Multiverse, every week on the Podcast Radio Network and Apple Podcasts.
And check out the show today on the ESO Network.
Welcome to My Defend Your Childhood. This week, we're talking Highlander, which is possibly, I guess, a Mr. Krabs origin story, I guess. I don't know. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defend Your Childhood. On our panel, we have Daniel.
Hello. I'm Daniel, and I live in constant dread of being stalked by Clancy Brown.
And Matt.
Matthew W. Quinn, who watched a lot of Highlander, the movie and the TV show years ago, and is really defending his childhood tonight.
You know what? We should start with you then, because I'd seen this before, maybe once ever. But I think you were the one probably then who was really pushing for us to do an episode on it. So what did you remember? Like, how did this hold up?
Okay, I remember most of what generally happened in the movie. I didn't remember the weird accent that Christopher Lambert had.
Well, I think Chris Lambert just has that accent.
And that's just how he talks.
Well, yeah, him talking like that in the present day makes sense, but a Scotsman with a French accent?
Oh, have you ever heard of the movie The Sicilian? Because he plays a Sicilian in that and speaks with the exact same tone of voice and accent.
And he, I think, is an American, but I think he's a military brat, maybe. He spent most of his years growing up in Switzerland.
Yeah.
And he sounds like Peter Sellers. Like, he has this kind of, Ramirez, you are here to chop my head off.
No, I'm here to teach.
That's more Ren than Peter Sellers.
Well, to be fair, isn't Ren supposed to be Peter Sellers?
Peter Lorre.
Oh, shit. You're right. Peter Lorre. Thank you.
Kind of different people there.
But yeah, just
are they
smidge.
French?
No, they're all American.
Peter Lorre was German.
Was he German? I thought he was an American. Well, I know him from Casablanca, of course.
Oh, he was in M, which was definitely a very German movie.
That's true. Yeah, I guess you're right. But yeah, Chris Lambert here is something. I don't even know what he is, but he is something.
Yeah, his delivery and like the scene where he reveals to Brenda, you know, I am a 400-year-old man who cannot die. He just sounds, it's supposed to be dramatic. He just sounds so Lambertian. I mean, the Adrian Paul, who played another immortal McLeod dude in the TV show, I think was a better actor.
You know, I just realized something looking at your picture here, Matt. Change the haircut out and Christopher Lambert is basically you.
Maybe I am really an immortal Scotsman. Who knows?
Well, you got okay. The accent for it.
Okay, so let's do fuck you, man. That's really funny. Okay, Matt, why don't we go to you this time? Just because this is your movie. Give us a quick plot synopsis.
Okay, it starts out at a professional wrestling match where you see a gentleman who calls himself Russell Nash watching it, and he really doesn't seem to be having any fun. Then he goes out to a parking deck and gets into a fight with some dude and cuts his head off. And then cars start exploding and all this crazy stuff starts happening. And he hides his katana in a light fixture and tries to flee the scene only to get arrested. And along the way, we start getting flashbacks. It turns out he was actually born in medieval Scotland. And he was killed in the battlefield by evil Clancy Brown, who calls himself the Kurgan, who wants to take his head, because it turns out there's a secret society of immortals, and at the end of the day, there can be only one, and therefore they spend the centuries, you know, having duels and cutting each other's heads off. Are you doing that okay. On purpose?
I'm trying to do the laugh, but I don't have the voice. But yeah, this is something. He has this kind of weird, like, like chuckle thing that he does on and off.
It's in Mortal Kombat when he's Raiden, it reaches peak Christopher Lambert.
Kinda, yeah. Also, they're immortals. He is a Highlander in a world where Sean Connery plays a Spaniard,
an Egyptian.
Yeah, so figure that shit out.
Yeah, in my blog, I said that maybe they should have had Omar Sharif play him because Omar Sharif is Egyptian Arab, and plus Spain, there's so much Arab in their gene pool that you could play a Spaniard too.
That would have just lent the movie too much respectability by getting the old Lawrence of Arabia cast.
Well, and at the end they end up what's the black guy's name? He has a Japanese name, so it's
Castamere
just like
or something.
Oh, Castamere, there you go.
Yeah, the name sounded vaguely Arabic.
It's all bullshit. Or if you've got Sean Connery, because I would assume you get him because he's got like actual acting cred and he's got a recognizable name and such, why not make him Scottish too? Shock.
Now I've got a question for Matt about the plot. How does Freddie Mercury fit in all this? Well,
when I started watching the Highlander TV show when I was in middle school, they were doing the soundtrack for that too. I just really like Princes of the Universe.
Wasn't Freddie Mercury dead by the time the show came on?
Well, Freddie Mercury probably died after the movie because Queen did the movie soundtrack. They did all of it, including a Who Wants to Live Forever, which actually made me feel feelings.
The song Who Wants to Live – oh, that power ballad midway through?
When Heather dies and he stays young forever, and it is so sad.
That is a sad scene. I'll give you that.
That's a good song. I mean, Queen wrote a pretty good soundtrack for this, all things considered.
Well, I mean, this is a canon production. Like, we can't let that get away from us. Like, this is a...
I was so happy to see that logo. You have no idea.
I mean, like, they make a lot of crap, but it's usually pretty fun crap to watch. So, like, this movie I'm totally fine with. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, this movie gets either a 7.5 or 8 on my blog, just because no matter how weird it gets, it's still entertaining.
All right. I have no response to that. Does plugging the blog help?
Well, no, I'm just saying that, yeah, it's got Christopher Lambert's acting is weak, and
see, it's funny because I think he might be the best. Because, like, the women he's acting, like, the two do-nothing cops are like, we'll get you next time, Connor McLeod. And you're just like, whatever, I guess, kind of.
Well, I mean, it's still entertaining. I mean, I downloaded it to my Kindle and watched it on the elliptical and made an hour go by pretty quick.
Well, I mean, here's the thing I will say, at least at this point. It's not great. Literally none of it makes sense. But it's kind of like a weird sword-based action movie, which there aren't a lot of. So it gets points for that.
I just have so many questions about this movie because the whole thing about the Immortals' quest, the plot, the villains, they make no sense.
Well, I mean, and the rules themselves make no sense. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, why does there have to be only one? Why were all the Immortals born at different periods in time? And if that's the case, then how can they ever be sure that there will ever be only one?
What exactly is
the prize?
Yeah, new Immortals will just keep being born, so that could be an issue.
Well, I mean, clearly, because Ramirez, when Sean Connery shows up and claims to be an Egyptian Spaniard working for King Charles V or whatever, he said that later he's been around since, like, 800 BC or something like that. Because right. The sword is 600 from 600 BC when I went to Japan because I'm an Egyptian man. So whatever.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me, and this is going to be a real deep cut that's probably going to get stuff thrown at me, Anne Rice's vampire novels.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Well, yeah, the vague whole immortality all, sucks thing.
They're all immortal. There's vague homoeroticism underlying the entire thing. Everybody's born at different eras. Anne Rice needed to sue.
Yeah, well... Although this came out much before the movies, right?
The novels, I know, at least the first one had been out for a good long while by the time this came out.
That's possible. So we kind of need to go through this. Yes, that did bother me too. The movie cuts back and forth between the old, like his growing up about 500 years ago, right?
More or less.
What he says, 550. In the Highlands as the Clan MacLeod. He's the only one who's actually a Highlander. The rest are just immortals. I kept wanting to call them all Highlanders, but
a lot of
the movie kind
that.
Of corrects
they really
me.
Shouldn't do that.
Yeah. The movie kind of corrects you halfway through. But yeah, I don't know. It's whatever. So, like you said, we start at this wrestling match. Someone gets their head cut off, and that's where the B plot comes in, which is what's her name? Rachel's the woman he's like married to.
No,
right?
Rachel's like his adopted daughter. The original cut didn't make that clear, but the version I saw had a flashback where he saves her from some Nazis in World War II.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And so she's kind of an appropriate age. So, like, the adult version is a woman in her 50s, and this is what, 81? This is 86. Jesus Christ.
I think the movie says in 85. The movie came out in 86, so whatever.
Oh, so that makes it a period piece.
Yeah, actually, kind of does. I mean, it's got scary 80s New York. It's got professional wrestling. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I mean, it's got that metal punk aesthetic that the Kurgan wears, which is why people aren't freaked out by him just based on sight.
Yeah, or, I do love that scene. At one point, Kurgan is... sword fighting, what's his name? Castigar, in an alleyway in like Dinkins, New York, where like he's literally cutting someone's head off, and then like all the prostitutes just show up to kind of watch when like a gun nut, like hard Marine guy tries to shoot him and just gets cut in twain. Like, that's a pretty great scene.
Yeah, he shoves a broadsword in his gut and out his back and holds him like 6 feet off the ground.
Yeah, the guy's kind of a badass.
Yeah, he is.
Which makes it all the better that you realize he's going to be Mr. Krabs in a later life.
Yeah.
He won the prize, and the prize is being able to run a really good burger restaurant.
Yeah. Hey, I tell you what, man, like, his character arc is the one that makes kind of the most sense. He's just an asshole the whole time. We get almost none of his backstory, which I'm fine with. I'm really okay with it. You know, it's not necessary. But yeah, so this B plot comes in with, what's his name? We have Chief Murdoch, Lieutenant Moran, right? And Detective Walter Bedsoe. I'm looking at my notes. Yeah. John Polito is in this, and he's great because he plays DeFino from The Big Lebowski, and that's where I recognized him from right away. I just like how he always just plays a, like, kind of a cop dick character, which is fun. But they start investigating someone who is decapitating people in parking decks in the middle of Jersey, right? This is like, that decapitation is in Newark, I think.
He was killed in Madison Square Garden, but there was someone else killed in New Jersey recently. Because, right, you know, the gathering, they're all being called to America to fight each other.
Right, and that's why. I don't know. They don't explain why this has to happen, especially since everyone seems kind of cool to live together except for Kurgan. Because, like, Castagir is just hanging out, and Ramirez just kind of wants to hang out. Everyone else just, I don't know. Kurgan just kills people. The only one who dies is that guy in the Italian suit at the beginning, who I don't think gets a name.
Faisal or some Arabic name.
Yeah, maybe that's right. Maybe, yeah, Faisal maybe, or yeah, there he is. Peter Damon, a guy named Peter played Faisal, because of course he did. This is really against typecasting, you know, this is progressive. In case you're curious, Peter Damon played the guy, the sand raider in Star Wars, who knocks Luke off the horse with his gun. When he goes, yeah, that guy.
You can really pull that off.
And he's also a stuntman from Raiders of the Lost Ark. He did all the Star Wars movies as well. So, you know, he could also be a dead Arabic man in a suit. You know, who'd have thunk it? Anyway, so that's kind of it. That's the A plot and the B plot. What do you guys want to go from here? Like, this movie's kind of fun.
I want to go through just how useless Sean Connery actually was in this movie.
Sure, why not? Yeah.
I mean, he was supposed to be like a mentor figure, although considering all immortals are supposed to fight to the death, I don't understand why he would mentor a potential rival to the prize.
Well, maybe, and, maybe he doesn't really buy the mythology that, you know, maybe he doesn't want to win the game.
What's the game? What's the point? Like, we know at the end he gets the line, I know everything. I know everything. But there's no real purpose.
Yeah, they
like, so I guess it makes you smart.
I think it makes him some kind of psychic, but yeah, I've noticed that too. Ramirez at one point nearly gets the Kurgan in the first whack, and then just monologues, and then the Kurgan kills him.
Yeah, I mean, who knows, whatever. Also, the Kurgan kind of apparently knows everything. Like, because he just runs around killing people. I mean, it's our first flashback. We flash back to 16th century Scotland, where the Clan MacLeod is doing really well until the Kurgan with Clan Fraser shows up. So we don't know if the Kurgan is also Irish or Scottish, or it just happens that he's stumbled across stuff. And, right?
I could have sworn at one point they said he was Russian or like Eastern European, yeah, or Transylvanian or something.
Yeah, Ramirez explained that he's from Russia, so he's one of the earliest Indo-Europeans.
So according to his IMDb, or according to his Wikipedia page, because it exists, he was born in Russia in 1005 BC, and died in 1985 in New York City.
Oh, yeah, they have this whole elaborate mythology in the TV show and all this other stuff. They went into a lot more detail than the movie does.
Yeah, he was taught by the Bedouin, who's dead, as well. So there you go.
Yeah, mentor occupation hazard there. The Kurgan learned all he needed to do and then shivved him.
I learned it from watching you, okay? Also, what's the point of getting the souls? We don't really get that either.
I don't understand what the prize is.
It's apparently telekinesis. If you believe the second movie, it's because they're all aliens from space.
Oh, and no.
It is true.
That's why I'm so upset.
If you remember the third movie, it doesn't matter because they forget the second movie entirely.
There was a third movie?
Maybe Connor and Brenda were doing a bunch of acid, and that's where the second movie comes from.
Well, and I only want to correct Daniel. So the third movie is not the end of it, first of all. There's another two movies afterwards. But it's all a train wreck. Like, all of this is a train wreck. But anyway. So, I'm sorry. I'm just looking at pictures from the movie because I took notes, but I wrote down, like, I'm pulling up, like, pictures from Wikipedia, and this is great. Anyway.
I'm just surprised there's a Wikipedia page. Now, I'm just surprised.
There's a Highlander wiki. There is so much of this out there.
I know. I'm surprised that there was such a huge franchise, because from what I understand, this movie didn't do too well.
No, it didn't. I think it's gotten more of a cult following. Like, because, yeah, it lost money on the on the initial gross, which is weird because it's canon. Like, so generally, canon movies were pretty cheap. They printed money because of, like, the fact that they all came out generally at good times. They were cheap as hell to make, and they had sort of stars, right? Like, because Sean Connery's a star, but he was a star in the 60s and 70s. In the 80s, he kind of fell away, and then in the 90s, he had kind of a resurgence.
Sean Connery's back, everybody.
And then he was like one of those guys who just randomly show up in movies. Like, I don't know, he won an Oscar for The Untouchables like a year after this movie got released, so hey.
Yeah. I mean, and like Christopher Lambert is a weird choice because he's a fine actor, but he's also legally blind.
He's a fine actor.
And he's legally blind.
Yeah, so that makes this all the more impressive.
Kinda, but it also makes it clear that there's a lot of scenes where he's replaced by a stunt double immediately. And he was married to Diane Lane. Not that one, the other one. The one who married Josh Brolin. she was in Trumbo, and she's Martha Kent in Batman vs. Superman. And was married to Sophie Marceau for a while? Good for him.
Lucky bastard.
Yeah, good man. Too bad she was in The World Is Not Enough. That's a terrible movie. Anyway.
Tied the movie into their marriage failing somehow.
What now?
That was a joke. Maybe say that she ended up with that movie because of the divorce trauma.
Now, how can you leave me, Sophia? Don't you enjoy the time we spend together?
Don't make me speak French to you. I've lost it all. I'll try, but it'll be rough. I also love how, like, what's her name gets interested in him. Brenda gets interested in him because he has a katana that doesn't make sense because it's from a thousand years before the technology made to do it.
And it's, like, worth, what, several million dollars, and he just tossed it in a parking garage?
Yeah, so in terms of female characters with agency, Brenda has plenty of it. I mean, heck, she's basically stalking him half the movie.
Well, yes, but she fails the Bechdel test. She fails every kind of test because all she does is talk about him to other people and about herself, trying to catch him. He catches her in the stupidest lie ever, which is she wants to be an expert in sword. She is an expert in, like, forensics, but she says she's, like, She says she's interested in talking to him about swords or whatever, like seducing him to get to him on a date.
I'll talk to you about my sword, baby. We'll talk about swords all night long.
He cracks out a $250 or 250-year-old bottle of brandy.
Why not?
I don't know. Like, again, none of this movie makes sense because, like, this is kind of a cliche in movies that if you live forever, you're kind of rich, which sort of makes sense. But, like, they're not time travelers, you know? It's not like I'm thinking, oh, this beer is going to turn into something really valuable in 500 years. That's not how these things work. People just kind of get lucky. So he has like a basement room filled with his trophies from all the quickenings that I guess he did. But it's filled with swords and booze, and he just uses it to seduce women, which is kind of great.
That's what I'd do after living 500 years. I figure I would have finally figured out that 200-year-old bottles of scotch is apparently the most potent aphrodisiac imaginable.
Well, and he's just kind of a scumbag. Like, he's not a bad dude. Like, he's not going around hunting people for sport, which Kurgan kind of is. But he's just kind of a scumbag. It's kind of great.
Well, he doesn't seem so bad. I mean, he lives with Heather until she dies of old age rather than ditching her, and he's not so pretty anymore. And afterwards, doesn't seem to have been romantically involved with anybody. So that's why I figure maybe he went for Brenda so quick, is after 400 years of basically celibacy, he couldn't handle it anymore. But I didn't get that Brenda
wanted. I'm going to go ahead and say you're kind of wrong.
Well, the immortals aren't celibate. They're just impotent.
No, they're
not impotent. They just shoot blanks.
But I never got why Brenda was interested in him romantically. I figured maybe she was just curious about this guy who's 200 years old.
I think this is Daniel being right. Like, the raw sexual charisma of Christopher Lambert. And he's so blind, he doesn't even know what she looks like, so that's good.
If you want my body and you think I'm sexy, come on, baby, let me know.
Just like my katana, it bends kind of upwards and to the left.
Oh.
You got nothing. No, by the way, the balls on this movie, it was produced by Highlander Productions Incorporated. Someone thought they had a thing. And by the way, in case you're curious, there's a 1994 Highlander animated series.
Oh, I remember that. Apparently it's really bad.
Okay, this is starting to sound like just a giant money laundering scheme.
Hey, man, it's only money laundering if it doesn't make money back. And I mean, this might have been like the most money breaking even scheme ever. Because, like, so you're going to have a TV show in 1992. Listen to some of these it's lasted 6 years, by the way. Some of the guest stars you end up with: Joan Jett, Tracy Lords, Roger Daltrey of The Who, Rowdy Roddy Piper.
This sounds like the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
It was awesome, at least when I was in middle school.
Sandra Bernhardt and Ron Perlman as well.
Ooh.
But again, this is 1992. Was Ron Perlman anyone in 92?
Yeah, he'd already been in that one show.
Where he lives in the sewer.
But I thought that was after this. Like, I thought this was...
That was like the 80s.
Was it really? Oh, yep. God. All right, fair. I mean, like, it just... Vandernoot. That's Adrian Paul, right? Adrian Paul was Duncan MacLeod?
Yeah, he was like from a later generation of the same family. So in the show, he recounts about a man in his grandfather's time who died and lived again. That was Connor.
But here's my point. Why do they all have to be a Connor MacLeod's family? Because this is not a genetic thing, because they can't pass it on, right? Why couldn't he have just been like a German or a French guy or a Russian or a Japanese guy Highlander, right? Because the family, like, it's they can't have kids. It's not a genetic thing. It seems to be a freak of nature. Or if you believe the second movie, who's written and directed by the same director, by the way, they're aliens. So in case you're curious, by the way, there's a reboot in the works. Who would you hire to play Ramirez?
Well, here's what disappointed me about this.
Sean Connery again?
This is a canon movie. This was made at the height of canon's power, and it's not Chuck Norris and Charles Bronson in it.
Oh my God.
There's your Ramirez in the cloud right there.
No way. Bronson should have played the hardscrabble cop trying to kill him. And at the end, he shoots Kurgan 6 times or whatever, like 6,000 times. It's a cop revenge movie, which of course doesn't stop Kurgan, but it slows him down enough so that his head could get cut off. That's what you do.
Oh, there you go. You know, this damn guy's taken 6 rounds to the chest and he's still walking.
And he's not a minority in the subways. I don't know what to do here.
You know, Denzel Washington went down easy in the subway.
Sure did. He sure did. That's a shame that he's dead. We haven't done any of his movies.
I know.
Stay tuned.
Oh, man.
He might definitely be a stay tuned. Ooh. So they're apparently trying to remake this movie, right? They're trying to do a complete reboot. In 2005... Kurgan has been officially cast. Do you want to guess who he is?
I'm gonna guess your Butler, just because.
Good guess. But it's wrong. But that's not a bad thought. Do you have a thought, Matt?
I have no idea. That's why I'm saying go for it. I'm not even gonna try.
Dave Bautista.
Oh.
Yeah, Matt, for you, if you can't think of him, he's Drax in the Guardians of the Galaxy movies.
Yeah, I couldn't remember his name, but I knew he was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
He's also the heavy henchman guy from Spectre in the Bond movie that just throws Bond off, or gets thrown off the train by Bond. And they've cast Ramirez, speaking of James Bond, by Javier Bardem, who actually can play a Spaniard, I'd say.
Yeah. That sounds good.
Yeah, these are real actors again. So I don't know, man. Remake it. Sure. Everything's getting remade now. Give it a decent budget, do some special effects. Make sure you actually have sword fighters though. But like, I just hope it doesn't lose the craziness, like the charm. Like that's kind of what Cannon does best. Like that's why you could have a Stallone movie where he does arm wrestling for no reason.
Well, in the TV show, the quickenings were a lot more impressive. Like there are lightning bolts and stuff going on everywhere. So if they give it decent effects money and have a decent cast, this could be great.
I'm just so surprised because the whole thing about Cannon is that they believed that whatever they were doing was going to be the biggest, best thing ever made. So they went all in on it. And this felt almost subdued for a Cannon movie. It's like nothing's exploding. You know, they're not like casting out of their prime people convinced like they're going to be the next big star that they're going to revive. It's so weird for a Cannon movie.
Well, and it's not only weird because of the pacing like that, like the big actor pacing, because like you're right. You should have had like a Chuck Norris as the young cop that no one gives a shit about. Right. Like they had this kind of stable of actors by this point. You could have had, it's weird because Connor McLeod, whatever his name is, Kurt Russell in this movie.
Russell Nash.
Thank you. Like he kills one guy at the beginning and then he's just kind of like, I'm too good for this. I would have loved it if Kurgan had a henchman too. Like if a young Dolph Lundgren was there and like, he's the one that falls first. I don't know. Like, I just want to see what like a McLeod can actually do. And we barely see it. Like we see him nearly die 6 times.
Well, there's that whole subplot where, he comes back to life and everybody's convinced that means he's a witch.
I kind of like that. I kind of dig that.
That was fine, but I almost would have preferred, considering how this is supposed to be an action movie. Like, you know, they emphasize that he was cut down in a medieval battle, and then it's like him lying a bunch of pile bys, and suddenly he just stands up.
Yeah, or like, God, if you wanted to go all crazy, because it's 15th, it's a little late, but if you put it like 200 years earlier, and there's like a crusade army against him because they do think he's a demon, and like he has to fight off someone, like that'd be cool. We have random flashbacks anyway. Like, why not have him in the Civil War? Like,
or
I don't know.
If Ramirez came as like a Spanish inquisitor or something who was supposed to torture him to death, and he dies, but comes back to life, and Ramirez is like, well, that was just a test, Sonny.
Yeah. Well, that was silly. What's next? Like, I don't know. Yeah, that's something. Those are stakes.
So, I don't know. I mean, I never really got the sense that he was immortal. Like, have you ever seen this movie? I think it might have even been a direct-to-video movie, but it's actually really good. It's like called The Man from Earth.
No, I don't know that one.
No, I haven't.
It's like this little chamber drama about this college professor who's retiring, and he's gathered up all of his colleagues and stuff, and then he like goes through during his retirement saying, "Oh, by the way, I'm actually like 15,000 years old. I was around, when Homo sapiens first emerged on the Earth." And he goes through his biography, and it's amazing. And it's just him talking about it, and it's so evocative of like him living this eternal life. And I never got that same sense with MacLeod, even though you see him in medieval times.
Yeah, they have. I don't know. This movie is kind of. I mean, first of all, Daniel, you had a great hope for this movie. I don't think it's ever going to be that coming out of a canon picture. I'm going to just toss that at you.
I love canon because it's like perfect outsider art action movies because they're so ambitious, but they have no clue what they're doing. And this, I don't know, it wasn't nearly corny enough, if that makes sense.
I guess.
Scene where he just keeps killing the guy over and over and over again.
You mean kind of like the Jason and the Argonauts bit in Robot Chicken where it's Jesus and the Argonauts?
Yeah, that's funny.
I haven't seen that one.
I mean, it's exactly what you're talking about. It's a parody where they just keep, yeah, like that. They keep killing him over and over and over and over and over.
Because he's Jesus, he comes back.
Yeah.
But the rest of the Argonauts don't. Did anybody actually like the Kurgan as a villain?
Well, the Kurgan, the villain from one of my unfinished novels actually inspired in his appearance by the Kurgan, like the helmet.
So other than plagiarizing him, was he a good character?
He's kind of, it seems like he's lived so long, the only enjoyment he gets out of life is just screwing with people. Like when he kidnaps Brenda and he drives the wrong way down the street while singing New York, New York.
That rendition by Queen of New York, New York is atrocious. But yeah, I mean, like that scene is supposed to be someone who's beyond death and doesn't feel anymore, I guess.
But and he's hitting just, on nuns.
Well, kind of. He's a rapist, but like he doesn't even seem to really want to hit on nuns. He likes to scare them. He just kind of barks at them.
He's speaking of plagiarism. He reminded me way too much of the Terminator in the first Terminator.
Yeah, he's
just sort of this force of nature as opposed to an actual living person.
He's not particularly compelling to me. He just plays an asshole. Like, he puts a bunch of clothespins in his neck to try to make himself look kind of gothy, and it doesn't really do much. It's just not great. I don't know. He makes a good boss, but that's why I said, like, you need a henchman or someone with characters. Or maybe he's the henchman and, like, there's a, you know, kind of like, I don't want to say a brainy, but more like a mafia guy, you know, kind of a wise guy who's the actual one who wants to be the last one. Knowing, and the Kurgan knows full well that he would kill his boss first, but he's willing to use the guy to help him get places, right? But, like, they don't do anything with him, so he's just kind of this putz.
Wouldn't it make sense for him to be like a taskmaster as opposed to somebody who's constantly just feeling that bloodlust? Because that if that's what he's been doing for 3,000 years, that's what would get boring.
Yeah. And also, we don't know how he knows people. So, like, was there literally a memo that goes out that says, oh, there's a Highlander meeting or an immortal meeting where everyone's just going to fight to the death? Which is kind of what we get the mythology
is they all start feeling some kind of psychic compulsion to go there once there are only a few of them left.
Okay, so what happened the previous 400 years?
There might have been more of them.
So, but again, like, do they smell you and they're like, oh, you're a Highlander, and they're like, I'm going to cut you up?
Well, in the professional wrestling scene, Connor is sensing Faisal somehow.
I guess. I mean, I don't know. Like, none of this is explained. We don't even know how he finds the – what's his name? Kagiri? Like, we end up, the next time we see him, he's killing a guy in an alleyway, and it just happens to be someone that was established a scene and a half before, who we don't even know what happened to, you know, to Lambert, because they were going off to go drinking together, and then he abandons the guy just so he can die. Anyway, we're kind of at the end. We've talked about every scene individually. At one point, there's like a showdown in a church where they're, I think they're in St. Patrick's in New York.
And then there's the ending where McCloud actually does get the prize after killing the Kurgan, and there's a lot of like 80s special effects and stuff, which felt kind of anticlimactic to me.
Yeah, I remember I remember when I saw the movie the first time, finding the final duel kind of underwhelming. And what's with all the monsters and demons in the quickening? Is it supposed to be because the Kurgan is just that?
That makes no sense. Yeah, literally, that makes no sense. No sense. So we don't know why the Kurgan does what he does, right? But, like, on top of that, when Connor finally kills them, or Connor McCloud, I forget, he has, like, six names over this movie.
With Russell Nash as his latest false identity.
And Montague is before that. Like, apparently he just every 50 years or so pretends to die, steals the name of a kid who dies in childbirth, and then, like, just lives on for another 50 years in New York City.
Yeah, in the same house, too. That's not very smart.
Right, because it's not like he changes neighbors.
assuming there are about 20 years between when he grows up to receive the inheritance, quote-unquote grows up, there might still be some people moving in and out, but there'd still be someone somewhere.
So you die one day, and then someone with a colorful mustache moves in, but looks other like you other than a colorful mustache. But people are going to be like, oh, I thought you died. Like, your neighbors aren't going to be, like, completely forgetting. I don't know. It's just stupid. Well, anyway. On top of Silver Sun Studios, there's a really big fight scene, which is kind of great. But we don't know the rules of any of this. Because, like, sometimes when he gets stabbed or cut, he takes weeks to recover. But in this, they fall 5 stories through a ceiling, and then they both kind of just stand up and start fighting again. So maybe they're Wolverine, I guess. I don't know. And at the end, he cuts Kurgan's head off. All the ghosty men fall out after a bunch of force lightning, and then he takes Brenda to Scotland, I guess, where he sees a force ghost of Sean Connery, speaking of things stolen from a few years before. And that's kind of where the movie ends. There can be only one Ramirez.
But there could be, like, what, 6 of these movies, at least 2 TV shows that we've discussed. There was a lot more than one.
Yeah. They justified the third one by saying there are these 3 immortal goons who were buried in a cave-in for, like, 400 years. And when someone dug them up, they woke up, and that started the game again.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. That doesn't work because the whatever the quickening is doesn't know that there's 3 random people somewhere.
Yeah, no.
Or it would know. It would know. I mean, that's – oh, my God, my head.
Well, and like, again, we've already said this, but you can only be the one for, like, a few months because the universe seems to, like, throw some at you every now and again. Right? Like, they seem to keep giving more. Like, there seems to be more born all the time.
Yeah. Which, again, makes no sense. But, damn it, movie. Be more coherent.
Right. But anyway, I think we've done this pretty well. Why don't we wrap it up? We'll start with you, Daniel, then we'll go to Matt, and then I'll give my final thoughts.
I think I already gave my final thoughts. Damn it, movie, be more coherent.
Fair enough. Huh. Matt?
I give it a very low B. It's entertaining, and there's some stuff that could be done better, and some stuff that, could be, you know, ironed out more and make more sense, but it's not a bad movie. I think it's pretty fun.
I'm going to agree and disagree with both of you. I don't think it's a very good movie, but I think it's a lot of fun. This is one I will watch again. It's like, honestly, it moves pretty well. You have some of the most ineffective detectives ever. You kind of get this moment where they're trying to force the Marine guy to point the finger at Christopher Lambert, like kind of corrupt cop thing. And they're like, oh, I guess you got us. I don't know. Like, so much of this is done by people who barely understood anything about making a good film, and they just kept throwing shit at it. I don't know. Most canon films kind of get a pass from me, so I might not be the best person to judge this, but I enjoyed it. But with that, man, excuse me. With that, we're kind of out of time. So while I have you guys here, next week, we're kind of dipping our feet back into an incredible kind of classic. We're doing some fun movies as we build up to kind of the summer. So I guess my hint is a quote, which I don't usually do, but I can I'll do one here. Oh, it's okay. It was just cans. It was filled with cans. So with that, tune in next week and every future week when we put another piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys. I am immortal. Here we are, born to be kings. We're the princes of the universe. Here we belong, fighting to survive. Myopia Defender Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by The Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.